Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Anoush, and on today's episode of the New Statesman podcast, I'm joined by our polling expert, Ben Walker, and our environment correspondent, India Bork, to discuss the Greens and their future and how well they did at the local elections. Thanks so much for joining us, both of you.
Good to be here.
Likewise.
So you've both written fascinating pieces in the wake of the local election results, looking at the successes that the Green Party had and what direction the party is moving in. Obviously, they've had a run of good local election results in the past few years, and they've broken the, I think they've called it the 500 barrier. So they now have 547 councillors on 167 councils. And what's really interesting and what you both picked up on in your pieces is that they have been taking council seats, both from Labour and the Conservatives. I think in the last local elections, last year, it was pretty much equal. And then this year, it was more from Labour. But of course, there were more Labour seats up for grabs. But what they will be delighted about behind the scenes when you speak to them is that they have such a range across the country of victories. And Ben, you've done this really great map that just shows the total spread from the Wirral to Newham to Hastings to Rutland. I mean, it's just all over the place, which obviously will present challenges as well as a morale boost. Ben, first of all, why don't you take us through some of the more interesting results and the numbers?
Well, thank you for having me. The Greens, as you say, their gains, their wins, their breakthroughs are so geographically disparate, random almost. They're winning in leave areas, leave voting areas as much as remain. They're winning in the gentrified parts of West Yorkshire just as much as they are on the more deprived red brick bits of the Wirral. It's remarkable. When we were charting the rise of UKIP, which perhaps I think we covered a lot more than we have covered the rise of the Greens, it was very much stereotypical. It was demographic. It was white working class part of England, lower levels of, you know, qualifications, deprived across the board. The Greens, however, anywhere and everywhere. Perfect example is North Yorkshire. You have them, or North and West Yorkshire, rather. You have them winning in Saltaire, which is quite a done-up old, would I call it, factory town. It's a bit north of Bradford that has gained in affluence, that has rediscovered its purpose from industry, that is a bit more gentrified. And then you also have them winning right out in the sticks in North Yorkshire, not too far from where I'm born. And I, when I was looking at the results, I was a bit like, they won there? That was a bit of a shock. I didn't expect that, really. But yes, Newham also a good example. Newham, which has been electing nothing but the Labour Party for the past, I don't know, 20 or something years, and there are 66 council seats, and two of them were won by the Greens a few weeks ago, which came as a shock. They come out of the woodwork, they come out of nowhere. And you have to wonder, how do they do this? Often they win in normally safe boroughs, safe seats for the Conservatives, or more so this year, safe seats for Labour. And every Green I've spoken to always say this, which is the local party, the establishment party, has taken these areas for granted. We've all probably followed canvassers, campaigners on the ground. And what the Greens say as well is that their opponents, the establishment, the incumbents, don't bother campaigning. They don't bother door knocking. So what the Greens do is they pick up on that. They go into areas that have been untouched by election machines, because as we know, in first past the post, safe seats don't get touched as much as marginals. And the Greens exploit that, because they show themselves as a local champions. They show themselves as an independence in a way. They are new kids on the block. And the question is, for now, will it stay that way? And do you think?
Yeah, that's the question, isn't it? And that is interesting that you use that phrase, they take us for granted. Yes, I have heard Green Party figures say that when they're out campaigning. But that I've also heard UKIP saying that when I was out following them in whenever their surge was, 2015. And that's very common to hear from what perhaps we unfairly in Westminster term the protest parties. But India, in your piece, the headline of your piece actually was that the Green surge is more than a protest vote. So what made you come to that conclusion when you were talking to different people who had won various seats across the country?
Well, part of the headline is the fact that success isn't just measured in seats. And maybe we can talk later about the impact that these new councillors are having and that the surge is having. But yeah, more directly on whether their success will continue, I do think there's quite a few numerous reasons why they do have cause for optimism. As their co-leader, Carla Denyer, pointed out to me, she said, look, a single seat breakthrough on one council often leads to multiple gains in the future. So that happened for her on the Bristol Council. I think it also happened in Brighton and various other places. As Ben says, like that they do campaign locally, and they also were stressing that they do it year round and they're very committed. And combined with that, they have an emphasis on kind of practical local solutions to global problems. So you might have Labour saying, oh, we're going to introduce a windfall tax, which is great. And it's great that the Conservatives are picking that up and actually considering it now, it seems. But Labour can't actually implement that, whereas the Greens are coming along and saying, look, we can do this X, Y, and Z at a very local level. And if you vote for us, it will actually happen because we can control that at a local level. And then I suppose the big background reason, which you just can't ignore, is that the climate crisis keeps worsening. And I think people are very aware of that. And there's an interesting correspondence between the fact the green surge, you can see it really picking up in 2018. And that corresponds to, obviously, the kind of rise of the protest movements we've seen with the Extinction Rebellion, etc., and the Fridays for Future movement. But also there was a big UN report from the International Panel on Climate Change released in 2018. And that really hammered home that if urgent action wasn't taken to reduce emissions, then, you know, temperatures were not going to be kept within under 1.5 degrees warming. And it laid out the various, like very clearly, the various differences between 1.5 degrees of warming and 2 degrees of warming, and how, you know, species loss would be twice as bad, extreme heat would be 2.6 times worse, I think, or something. So that correspondence is really important too, I think.
And that's so interesting, because I remember when there was a time when the Greens were actually leaning more towards being the anti-austerity party and going quite hard on radical economic policies in the days of Natalie Bennett's leadership, when they were trying to vie for that left-wing space against Ed Miliband's Labour Party. And it seems that with the, you know, increasing urgency of the climate crisis that you laid out so well there, India, they have found more of their confidence, their core brand, as more and more voters put the environment further towards the top of the issues that they vote on. I think environment was the first time it was in the top three voting issues in the last general election. So I think that's really interesting. They've almost found their voice again with the fact that this issue has so much urgency and more salience among voters. And at the same time, behind the scenes in the party, that's corresponded with a culture change where you have so many more people who are tapped into what they need to do to win. You have these sort of like electoral strategists. They always have had that, but it's not been the kind of motivating factor in the party or something that's necessarily been the thing that kind of pervades behind the scenes throughout the party's machinery. It used to be a lot of very well-meaning sort of people based in a few local areas, mainly targeting well-educated urban city dwellers, having visions for a better world. But now it's kind of, you know, we know what we need to do to win. Ben, I was really struck by this quote in your piece. You were speaking to Nate Higgins, a very young new councillor in Newham who had just won. And he said, he was talking about this sort of flat pack election plan that they now have. And he was saying the amount of work it asks of you is obscene, which kind of, I mean, obviously he did very well to win, but it sounds like he was probably exhausted when he spoke to you as well. Did you get in that impression when you were talking to activists, there's a new way of them approaching elections?
Yeah. There's two types of campaigners in the country right now. The people who just shove leaflets through doors and think they've done a good day's work. And then those who do the door knocking. And I've noticed as well, like in really even safe Labour boroughs, Labour activists are just not knocking on the doors of their own vote. They are. And I'm probably imagining the same for Conservative activists. There is a level of laziness, I think, amongst the, if you want to call them, the establishment parties, that towards their voters and the Greens, the Lib Dems, and in some cases Labour in places they're insurgent in, being Worthing or perhaps even Stevenage and bits of Runnymede. What they do, what the Greens do, which is quite interesting, it's similar to what some Labour activists do, and indeed Lib Dems, which is, I was speaking to one on the Wirral, a Harry Gorman, who won Prenton last year off Labour on a pretty shocking big swing. Okay. Prenton is in Birkenhead. It's not exactly the most affluent. It's not exactly the most qualified. It's got its fair share of deprivations and problems. Okay. And what they do is they shove these questionnaires for your doors. That's about the first point of contact. And it's, what are your most important issues? What's important to you? And often it's not necessarily like political environment. It's like local environment. It's like the cleanliness of the streets. It's like bins. Mm-hmm. It's a bit more like the aesthetic, the upkeep of our community. And I should let you know, a declaration of interest here. I am a parish councillor myself. And I did a survey for my community, which sort of asked, what are your priorities as well? And it wasn't bus lanes. It wasn't youth provision. It wasn't jobs. It was really, am I proud of my community? Am I proud of my streets? And the Green brand, it's the least disliked brand out of all the main parties, because the Greens don't seem threatening or necessarily like antagonistic like the Labour or Tory brands is. So what the Greens do is they seek out your priorities. And if your priorities align with the Greens, they will cater literature, door knocking, interviews, questions to you all year round. So when I was speaking to Harry on the Wirral, who won it, like I say, won his seat last year, he was started campaigning in, I think, 2019. Okay, so from the start of COVID, before the start of COVID, to the first elections since COVID, he was regularly going on door knocking. He was, hey, you said in our questionnaire, you're interested in how housing is going on in Birkenhead Centre. How do you feel about that? And it's catering your messaging to them, which mass parties, bigger parties, don't often do or haven't been doing. And that's why part of the reason why the Greens gained big in St. Helens, part of the reason why the Greens are quite consistently present on the Wirral, why they are now picking up what were once safe Tory seats in the part of the country that I grew up in. It's they are exploiting, like any logical campaigner would do, they're exploiting laziness by the establishment parties, really.
That's so interesting, because India, you spoke to one of those people, Alex Catt, who defeated a member of the Norwich City Council cabinet, a Labour councillor in the most recent locals. And they were saying to you, people see other parties arguing on national issues, but they were actually going around looking at what people wanted them to do on the ground.
Yes, exactly. Like, they look at the local issues, and that does have an impact. So another councillor I spoke to, she's like, the Greens on the council, she'd just been elected to Exeter, but there's some Greens already on the council there. And she was like, it was the Greens who had to really speak up in these meeting on a new kind of housing development that was being planned, which had no electric car charging points or bike racks being built into the plans. And they were in shock, because they were like, how can this council be claiming to be sustainable and to be prioritising green issues and sustainability, and then not doing very simple local level things like this? So yeah, the Greens can have a big impact in it at that local level. But I also think there's an interesting kind of Russian doll phenomenon happening, in terms of they have their position of the local issues that they're supporting and demanding action on. But a lot of those are to do with things like more regulation, not less regulation, and more environmental protection. And it's interesting, they're making gains in blue wall areas, I think, as well. And there's some polling, recently polling out by Unchecked, and that shows that actually people in the same areas, those blue conservative areas, they don't support deregulation, and if anything, they're in support of more of it. And in the environmental context, that's quite interesting.
Definitely. And this is what I wanted to come on to, actually. So thanks for mentioning that. Something that our listeners will probably be particularly interested in hearing is whether or not they do represent a threat to, in the words of one Green Party advisor, those perhaps older, more liberal types who are put off slightly by the current Conservative Party, perhaps in those seats that we broadly define as the blue wall. I know that there was one Labour MP actually who had some losses to the Greens in their patch, who was defining the Greens as the new Lib Dems. And I'm not sure if that's necessarily an insult to the Greens either, because I've heard within the party them kind of thinking about the Lib Dems in the days of Charles Kennedy. Tony Blair wasn't left enough, and the Lib Dems were seen as another option, but they're also doing really well in rural areas as well as the urban centres, and picking up those more socially liberal voters who were in those conservative areas. So Ben, do they represent more of an electoral threat to the governing party than the Labour Party, which perhaps, you know, perhaps casual sort of people who aren't as tapped into politics might assume that the Greens do better in just in cities and in Labour places?
There is a argument right now, which is that the Green gains could not be sustainable. They are gaining in both so-called blue wall, red wall, Labour safe seats, Tory safe seats. And part of this is a consequence of the Green brand not necessarily being associated with left-right politics. It's new kids on the block. There's nothing bad you can say about the Green Party. They stand for environmentalism, which the vast majority of the country agrees with, sympathises with. And so you tend to think, like, where can the Greens go wrong? When they go on the national scene, when they re-enter the leaders' debates, and start competing with Labour and the Conservatives' issues of the cost of living and the economy, they will then be defined by the left-right divide. And there's a risk that they will turn some of their voters that they won over in this year's council elections and last year's and the years before. And so their vote, their target seats, their bastions of strength may be changed and reconfigured. They may start losing their seats in North Yorkshire, but gaining or concentrating in places like Newham, Norwich, Bristol. We don't really know yet. The challenge for the Greens is that we don't know in which direction where they will go. We really don't. The Greens in Germany, what they did is that they're more appealing. They're not exactly left-wing in the extreme. They're quite Lib Demy. And they were able to appeal to Christian Democrats just as much as they were liberals, slightly socialist people. And we need to think, we need to wonder, can the Greens do that here in Britain? In terms of electoral future, where can they gain in a parliamentary context? And this is the thing, this is the problem with the Green gains. You look at a map, and I did a map and it showed the Greens are gaining everywhere. The Greens are gaining in different parts of England. But are they concentrating in any places of a parliamentary constituency? Yes and no, there are a few. You've got Norwich South. Keep an eye on that one day, maybe. There's a high student population there that moved away from the Greens in 2018 back to Labour. We can probably attribute that to Jeremy Corbyn's leadership of the Labour Party there. The Greens are coming back there in a big way. They won the city centre. They won a fair chunk of the Norwich South area this year. Bristol as well, definitely worth keeping an eye on there. We don't really know to what extent they could pull it off in a general election. The Member of Parliament for the Bristol West constituency, Sangam Debonair. She is a popular liked MP. Can the Greens really pull it off in seating her? We don't know. And these are Labour seats. These where the Greens are focusing their vote, where the Greens are concentrating their support is in Labour seats. In blue wall, in Tory areas, it's a bit more disparate. But, and I do apologise for the long rant here, I think the potential in blue wall areas is a lot higher, because when you think of Tory voters, they are as much as broad church as Labour voters, if not more. Okay, during the Cameron years, which Cameron appealed to quite successfully, was this kind of environmentally conscious, quietly liberal, but still conservative voting Tory voter. And these types of voters have had from the Conservative Party, they're a lot more academically qualified than the national average, and they've been flirting with the Liberals, with Labour, and indeed the Greens. And there's a lot of potential with them for the Greens. Mm. But again, it depends. Will they define themselves as friendly enough to them on the national scene?
I love Ben's level of granular detail, because it's so important in the kind of in the political system that we have. It's that it matters so much where votes are concentrated. I suppose from the big picture view, the thing that I found quite impressive was just how much youth support the Greens have. So longer term, if we're thinking about trends, they have so many of their new councillors have come up through the Young Greens. They have a big, large youth vote, and I do think that's an interesting pointer for the direction of future politics, perhaps.
Hi, it's Anoush here. This is just a reminder that as a podcast listener, you have the option of subscribing to the New Statesman with a very special offer. You can subscribe for just £1 a week. That's 12 weeks for £12 if you go to newstatesman.com/podcast offer. We'll be right back.
From the New Statesman comes a new podcast, Audio Long Reads, the best of our reported features and essays read aloud.
Songs are like tattoos, Mitchell said on Blue. Having one written about you is immortality and fiction rolled into one.
Featuring writing from our authors, including Kate Mossman on Joni Mitchell's former muse and lover, Jeremy Cliff on his journey through France before this year's presidential election, and Sophie McBain on the refugee crisis.
Don't die, he kept shouting. He didn't answer when Mardwa screamed back, "Who is dying?"
Ease into the weekend with our audio long reads, published every Saturday morning. Just search Audio Long Reads wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And now it's time for a section we like to call...
You Ask Us.
So our listeners would like to ask you, would the Greens work in coalition with Labour in government? So, I mean, obviously, we are a long way from this. And we ended up our last discussion by talking about the challenge for breaking through into representing more Westminster constituencies. But could this actually happen? Could there be an alliance of the so-called progressive parties? It looks like it will be tough for Labour to govern next time on its own. And there's been a lot of talk about unofficial pacts between Lib Dems and Labour. But what about the Greens? I mean, what's interesting is that the Greens are actually part of ruling administrations now on 18 councils. And I think some are still going through negotiations. So they've shown themselves on a national level that they can work with other parties to govern. And of course, you have the Scottish Greens as well, who have an arrangement with the SNP. The Greens probably do have more of a reputation as a coalition building or a cooperative party. India, how is it working on the ground at the moment for Greens who are trying to negotiate their new places on these councils?
People I spoke to said Greens are very good at being very cooperative on councils, and often that works really well. And they have a hugely positive influence as a result. I think London is a very good, that the London Assembly is a very good example of that. They've had green policies that can be seen to have been picked up by Sadiq Khan's new zero carbon pathway, etc. But I did drop a message to Nate Tiggins, who Ben mentioned earlier, just been elected to the Newham Council, which was very Labour, traditionally council. And he said the first few days in the jobs have been a bit wobbly in terms of Labour's been apparently quite intransigent when it comes to committee allocations. So where the Greens get their say on things. And they've refused the kind of configurations that the Greens have been suggesting, and it's been quite a tussle. And so that isn't looking so good for how Labour's going to behave more widely in the next 4 years. Maybe they're having a concern about having a slightly more threatening Green opposition.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because where the Greens come in and rattle these, well, you can only really call them one party state kind of councils, it's a microcosm for the national picture, because while it's difficult for politicians to say on record, yes, we would with X party in government, because they don't want their voters to think if I vote them, I get X. Behind the scenes, they are open to these negotiations, and it really takes two to tango, and Labour and the Lib Dems need to be willing to come to the table too. So I think that's the obstacle. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I've got a lovely story for you. Picture this. 2013, Norfolk County Council, UKIP just broke through. This was the first election after the Eastleigh by-election where they really broke through onto the political scene. In Norfolk, things are a lot more split. The Greens have a go at gaining seats. They gain a good number. Labour, they're on their up sort of because the Lib Dems are collapsing. And UKIP really comes second across all of North, right? Who's going to run the council? What happens is this. You have a coalition, an administration between UKIP, Labour, the Lib Dems and the Greens. They all got into bed together to run Norfolk County Council for a few years, only for a few years. It didn't work out quite long. And the only reason they did it was because they wanted to get rid of an incinerator in the county or oppose the construction of one. I can't remember it. That one single issue that vexed across the party. Did it work out? Yeah, I don't think it got built, but the coalition, I think, fell apart.
But nothing else got done either.
No, absolutely nothing else. But yeah, this is one perfect example of the Greens are just existing, capable of working if they have to, if they need to. Okay. Another example is where I'm based in Chester, and we have one Green councillor on Cheshire West and Chester. The guy represents a quite previously Tory ward of Helsby, and Helsby's quite affluent, quite, I wouldn't say gentrified. It's got its fair share of professionals, right? It's a nice little village on the outskirts of Chester here. And the Green councillor is not in coalition with the Labour administration, but they talk. and they cooperate on certain things. And in 2015, the Greens didn't put up that much of an effort in Chester because they got a commitment from the Labour Party that they would go really hard against fracking in the area. There was a risk in my parish council, for which I'm part of, that fracking was going to happen. And the fact Labour came out against it was one of the reasons why the Greens didn't put up an effort here. But there is a capacity from the Greens to work with what exists. They're not strong-headed enough to just go hard against everything. They're willing to cooperate. They're willing to work, which is perhaps something Conservative councillors and Labour councillors don't often do. I don't want to show bias, but they are demonstrating a positive influence in some councils across the country. But again, though, however, you have some areas where they are opposing housing developments and other others where they're completely backing them. Okay, they are finding political issues, they're exploiting them, and they are, in their eyes at least, standing up for the constituents they were elected by.
Yeah, and I suppose in their positive spin on that kind of thing, they would be maturing into a political party with the sort of all of the tactics that political parties do employ. And what's most interesting practically is that if they were going, say they won a few more seats in the next election, which is their aim, and they enter into some kind of agreement with the Labour Party, if the Labour Party wins enough seats to cobble a government together, their price for that surely would be electoral reform. And so you can't see a great deal of Labour politicians in Westminster talking about that. Of course, there are individual MPs who are on board with that. But what's interesting is Andy Burnham has come out in support for proportional representation. And you just wonder, is this kind of, has he got eyes? He is someone who's often touted as a potential future Labour leader, though he doesn't have a constituency, but has he got one eye on potentially that idea of working together with other parties in future? Because that's something that they'd have to discuss with the Lib Dems as well. But on a more theoretical level, even if they're not going to enter into some kind of formal pact with the Labour Party, they do have an influence on what the main parties argue for. So like when I interviewed Carla Denyer at the Green Party conference last year, you mentioned her earlier, India, one of the co-leaders, while they were selling themselves as this new electoral force who had an eye on winning, they also still accepted that a big part of the role that they play in British politics is to influence, a little bit like UKIP and the EU referendum. That part of their job is to pull the parties towards a certain direction. I think the way that she put it was, part of our job here as Greens is to help pull the Overton window in the right direction, arguing for bold climate policies. And then, of course, Sadiq Khan or the main political parties adopting some Green policies. So, India, do you think that influence will only get stronger, even if, they don't necessarily manage to overcome the first past the post hurdles come the next election?
I think that was a really interesting response I got for my piece from Sam Hall, the director of the Conservative Environment Network. And when I said it is the Greens kind of just a protest vote. And he was very clear. He said, look, the success of the Greens in the local election, it's a strong message to the government that Green policies are an asset. They're not a liability. That people are not turned off by them. If anything, they're turned on. And that, like, the more the government can listen to that, perhaps the better.
Yeah. And I suppose the big challenge now will be for them to overcome this thing, Ben, that you mentioned, having different policies, particularly about planning in different areas, trying to appeal to this sort of disparate cloud of demographics that they've got in their sights.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a cynic. I'm so sorry. I do think, regrettably, they are just the Lib Dems. They have occupied the space of the Lib Dems because, again, you see them opposing housing developments in one locale and supporting developments in another. And that's what the Lib Dems do. That's what Labour does. That's what every party does. They need to. They're currently succeeding based on local issues at the moment. Environment helps them, absolutely. The disaffection with Starmer helps them as well, not to mention, obviously, the disaffection with the government. But if they want to translate that to a national performance in a general election that is more than just coming close in Bristol and doing better in Norwich, they've got to define themselves on a national level again. Natalie Bennett did that. She did that rather well. She positioned herself as to the left of Ed Miliband, and Ed Miliband at times, I think, did feel pressured, although not by as much, because he was more pressured by UKIP and the Conservatives on the economy, UKIP on immigration. I think they've got to just reassess, do they want to go down that route again? Do they want to be the Natalie Bennett type Greens, or do they want to perhaps attempt to occupy Lib Demi position, Germany's Greens, in that they still have appeal with conservative voters, of which there are a lot of disaffected ones. There is a huge pool out there that they could be going for, but is it in the Green Party's mindset to do it? Is it in the Green Party's own activist nature to do that? I'm not so sure.
Yeah. It's tough because actually something they were grappling with when I interviewed the two leaders shortly after they'd been elected was questions about Insulate Britain and Extinction Rebellion. And I suppose we now have other sort of forms of direct action that have made the headlines since then. And they kind of were distancing themselves from those groups at the time. Perhaps that's tacking to the more Lib Demi route that you were describing. Well, thank you so much for joining us, both of you. That was a really good discussion. And we will, of course, be looking at other parties in depth in podcast episodes to come. You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Anoush Shakelian, and my colleagues, Ben Walker and India Bork. We're produced by Mae Robson and Adrian Bradley, and our music is Devil with the Devil, licensed under Creative Commons. Thanks so much for listening, and don't forget to subscribe and leave us a nice review.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.